So what I'm going to do are a few excerpts, highlights from the show, and then hopefully leave some time for Q&A. Yeah. What my show is about, I think, and the artist, playwright, not necessarily the right person to ask, but my opinion is that the show is about moments. What are moments? Moments are these glitches in your personal reality that stop you, that get your attention, they terrify you, they delight you, they laugh, they cry, but they all have a singular quality of getting your attention. It's easier, I think, if I could just give you a couple. So, this happened to a friend of mine who was co-op sitting in Manhattan for friends of hers who were spending a month in Jamaica. And her job basically was to make the place look lived. Lights on, turn the lights off, to water the plants and take care of Sneakers, the dog. Sneakers is a very large, very old Doberman pincher. So she goes to sleep that first night, wakes up in the morning, comes over, pets Sneakers, good morning. But Sneakers is not waking up. Sneakers is cold. Sneakers is dead. She's got their number in Jamaica. She considers calling them to tell them that her dog has died. It's not going to do anybody any good. I mean, let them enjoy their vacation, and when they come back, they will find out that their dog died. That's the decent thing to do. Except that money is a long time to live with a dead dog in the corner of the parking lot. He's too big for the freezer, and it's just as well. So she calls the Humane Society. She says, do you pick up? Whatever the option of delivery is. So the guy says, oh yeah, sure, every other Thursday. I don't suppose that would be this Thursday, I see, next Thursday. Well, I have this dead dog in my car. Oh, well, you can bring it down, the guy says. Okay, so she gets down the address, gets off the phone, picks up the leash. rummages around the apartment floor and finally finds a large old suitcase that, as it turns out, is just the right size for Sneakers. This is the obligatory mine sector that I have placed in the mine. I'm obviously not mine. That one, very bad one. So she gets Sneakers nails. She gets Sneakers in the suitcase, takes it down to the street level. Murphy's Law of Cabs, when you need a cab, no cabs. So she's going to have to take this dog uptown. Drags it like 7 blocks to the subway station, down the stairs, and buys a token. Goes to the turnstile, which she can't get Sneakers. So this guy sees her struggling. He says, this is going to be doing it with your luggage. Turns and runs out the subway station with the suitcase. Now, if in fact this man is not from the Humane Society, then he is about to have a moment. Stops running 7 blocks later between Avenue A and Avenue B, right? He flips up in the suitcase. And he doesn't know what to think. He's thinking, this city. You are sick. Who knows? He may have had a conversion experience on the spot. Because if anything, he's saying, hey, you know, give it up, hurry up, hey. You know what? You just want to dress up like the ultimate tourist. You know? Black Bermuda shorts, black socks, sneakers, a t-shirt that says, I'm from out of town, chump. Walk around Midtown Manhattan, 3 a.m., with your suit. It doesn't have to be a dead dog, it can be the carcass of your choice. See, this strikes me as the Quaker's Bernard Getz. See, Bernard, I understand Bernard's feelings. I understand not wanting to be intimidated and robbed by these people, but Bernard, you don't have to go from it to get with that. You can simply give them. Now, I would be remiss in my responsibilities to you as a storyteller if I did not tell you the following story, which speaks to the deeper and darker aspects of moments. I was living in Southern Oregon a number of years ago, and I was driving south on I-5, a beautiful June day, the Siskiyous and the Cascades, the beautiful evergreen forest of mountains on the other side. And I see this deer bounding across the median between I-5 South and I-5 North. I'm from New Jersey, and there are not a lot of deer on the Garden State Park. So I'm very impressed. For about a quarter of a second, and in the next quarter of a second, I realized that this deer and my Honda are headed for the same point on that freeway, same moment in time. I know that this happens. I mean, I've seen deer lying by the side of the road. I assume they're not sleeping. So I'm thinking, should I speed up? Should I slow down? Should I swerve? You know, I've heard too many stories of people who, in swerving to avoid animals, end up just roadkill themselves. Al, I'm sort of running through my options here, and first of all, there's not a lot of options to run through, and you don't have a lot of time to weigh those options. Because I'm going at 65 miles an hour. And this deer is going quite a bit better too. So as we get closer, I can see that this is a very large, beautiful creation of nature. And I am in a very small, kind of aluminum creation of small Japanese men. I don't like the odds. I don't want this deer to kill me. Well, we get to the same point on the freeway, same moment in time, and I'm waiting. Never have been in one of these, but I can guess there should be a crunching sound, antlers, metal, glass shattering, blood, my blood, the deer's blood, venison, everything. And we pass through that point. And there's no crunching, there's no antlers, no glass, no venison, no blood. And I look up in the rear view mirror, and I see these deer feet landing on the freeway behind me. The deer jumped. Big tires, pickup truck, and the deer cleared the pickup truck. So you begin to get this sense almost like there's a dear Olympics out there. We don't know about it. We don't know what the thing about.
We made it!
Yeah! I mean, we think we're very important. We've got things to do, places to go, but we're hurdles. Well, the car is fine. I'm a mess. So I pull over to the side of the road, and I start to tremble. Seems like a good idea. I tremble. Yeah. I guess to put this moment in perspective for you, you have to. This was a moment that you were jumping over. Kind of this moment. You have to understand that I was driving back from having premiered Life and Death, which 4 years ago was a very different set of stories, but it had the same basic theme, which is that life is filled with moments. And the more open to them you are, the richer your life becomes. Not easier, not better, richer. So sitting there in the front seat of my car, okay, to set this moment, you have to see that in having premiered what is essentially this call for moments, right? It's like, I'm a rebel, you over here. And on the way back from premiering this, this deer jumps over my head. So it is awfully hard not to feel, sitting in this front seat, like the universe isn't really kind of waiting for a reply. What'd you think? How was it for you? Now, it's not God that I picture up there. It's like God's employees. Being omnipotent, omnipresent. Not easy. So God has these employees, has this list of things to do today. I'm on the list, the number 11, Joe Kogo dash moment. Yeah, we got a guy here, Kogo, says he wants a moment. Hey, Mark, you got any of you up or what? Now, actually, it is characteristic of moments, I think, to be funny later. I'm not laughing yet. This isn't funny yet. Actually, I mean, I take this stuff very seriously. This makes a great story, and this happened. But I take this stuff very seriously. I think that the way in which you respond to your moments very much affects and determines the number and quality of moments for you down the road, so to speak. I think the Romans put this best. And they said, all the Romans got together and they said, the fates lead him who will, him who won't, they drag. So I'm volunteering. Yes, I'd like to go. So I compose myself in the front seat of my car, and I say, thank you. Thank you. That was a good one. Now, I would like more of these moments. But if you could hold off on the deer for about a month or two, I would appreciate it very much. Thank you, sincerely yours, Joe Corbett. Now, the deer illustrates something very important about them, and that not only do they get your attention in an extraordinary way, but they also seem to have something to say to you, as they do to me. What the deer seemed to be saying was, okay, Joe, please. Metaphorically here. You're cruising down the freeway. freeway of your life, in the Honda of your life, and you see something that's about to cross your path, and you know from your long history of problem solving and problem not solving, that this is going to be a mess. This is going to be a disaster, a catastrophe. You know that. Well, the mirror seems to be saying, maybe that's true. And again, maybe it's not. Sense in the way that it was asked that the answers I've been giving maybe left me with something to be desired. So cancer was for me first and foremost an opportunity to look at my life in a new way. It gave me this new pair of glasses that I didn't realize I needed, but once I put them on, wow, wow, different stuff going on. To really talk at length about cancer, I mean, there just isn't time. I'm going to sort of cut to the chase here, because for me, one of the most powerful messages that cancer sent to me was that, okay, if you're not really living the life that you came here to lead, I don't want to put words in your mouth, cancer says, but that's what you seem to be saying. Yes, that's true. Well, why is that? If there's somebody really in there who's not coming out, then when did they go away? And why don't they feel like it's safe to be out? It's a good question. In the course of my stories about my experience with cancer, I talk about the experience of being a bad patient and how there are studies that are done that show that when a medical professional views a patient as a bad patient, that patient doesn't. Good patient, that patient has a weaker immune system. And I extrapolate that study, those studies, to every other area of my life. Because what is a bad patient? A bad patient is not somebody who's always causing problems for the staff. A bad patient is somebody who asks for what they need and expresses how they feel. Now that's bad, because sometimes that means that people are asked for things that they're not used to giving. And that's bad. But it's very good in terms of taking care of yourself. So my commitment in my show, which is this autobiographical storytelling, these are true stories, as true as I can handle. Part of what I'm hiring myself to do is to be a bad son. Because as I answer that question, well, where did you go and when did you leave and why? I come back to my family. And although it is a family of remarkable people, amazing, the way it seems to work is that whatever you have worked out for yourself you give to your kids. You don't necessarily want to give it to your kids. And it drives you crazy when you see it in them, but you do it. It just works that way. So I got my parents' legacy. I caught it. And I think we all catch it. Now this is being a bad son. This is the piece that I want to read, perform, speak with you. Is being a bad son because the family that I come from had an unstated rule that it wasn't okay to express how you felt. Certain feelings, you could be happy. That was all right. But this, you know, what we like to call them is the dark side, was not permissible. And if I was scared, and if I acknowledged as a child my own fear of living in this home, then that would mean that there was something to be afraid of. And that would implicate my parents, and they weren't ready to live there. I don't know if they are yet. But that's a done deal. I've been raised, I'm here, I'm an adult. And now I get to heal the child inside. This piece is called The Filled Man. See the upstairs bathroom door of the house that you grew up in? See your mother scream like a banshee, pounding that door with the metal shoe tree you used in your penny loafers. See your father cowering on the other side of that door. You are 7 years old. See the metal beating the wood of the door? Hear the banging? See the black paint chips spraying in all directions? See the bare wood beneath? See the dents she makes? People walk up to those dents later. Pass your fingers like tiny diaper counters over the indentations. And click, 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 click inside your veins. See yourself hiding behind the door to the guest room. Across the hallway from this scene. See yourself making sure you are not seen. Hear her screaming. I'll kill you! I'll kill you, you son of a bitch! Jump up. You're in the kitchen. Again, you are 7. They are upstairs fighting. He's grabbing her. She says, "See how big your father is? See how strong your father is?" It's important they have an audience. And so my sister and I became audience jury witnesses to their broadcasts. Although this one I was alone for. This broadcast live from the top of the stairs to the kitchen, to my rice paper ears, my rice paper heart. then she is falling. She's tumbling down the stairs. Her large boned body carrying all that weight she never lost after the pregnancies. Her three lowest vertebrae fused as a teenager, she is more likely than most to be paralyzed by the thudding stair to wall, stair to wall, stair to wall. But it is I who am paralyzed. First by her tumbling, and then her laughter. Her laughter sounded as if she had triumphed, gotten him, goaded him into almost killing him. It was as if she were teaching him her pain by making him as angry as he'd made her, so angry that she put dents in the bathroom door and ruined forever her image of herself. She could never forget that she had wanted to kill someone, and now he'd been tainted too. I could not have known then. I would learn to love this memory. Rub it smooth between my fingers, a velvety stone found on a beautiful beach. I hold this stone like a charm. The charm is not the pain. But when I give myself back my pain, I make myself real. Lucky. Knowing that it was wrong and a lie, what we called a happy family was not. I took the fall for that. I hammered doors, hid in small rooms. My experience with cancer and with my family and with a whole host of other things in my life is best summed up by psychotherapist Arnold Mindell, who writes that a terrifying symptom is often your greatest dream trying to break through. This was clearly true for me with cancer, that perhaps nothing less terrifying than cancer would have gotten me to break through to myself and to the kinds of questions that I needed to ask about what I was doing with my life. But as I look back through my life, I could see that this same dynamic of there being a hidden blessing within a difficult or painful or frightening situation was true not only with cancer or my family, but in every such situation in my life. I felt like I knew this dynamic so well that I could name it. And so after months of thinking, I did finally come up with a name. I call it the Kogel effect. The Kogel effect is that moment of knowing that the worst thing in your life or in any given situation may contain the seeds of the best. Now you'll notice I say may contain the seeds of the best. Doesn't necessarily contain the seeds of the best. Because I like to leave room in my fear of the possibility that some things in life may just suck. It's a beautiful thing about the Kogel effect that as you see it in your own life and in the lives around you, life becomes a kind of emotional Aikido. Aikido is a martial art form that has very few attacks. The idea in Aikido is that your attacker is seen to be giving you the gift of his energy or her. And your job is simply to say thank you, to get out of the way of that attack, let your attacker go on by, and use very little of your own energy in helping them go on by, and because Aikido is about completing circles, to then help your attacker to the ground, which is where you know he wants to go. No one getting it. Now, Aikido is not the avoidance of confrontation, not running away. It is the transformation of confrontation into dance. My Aikido teacher's teacher described the dance this way. In his example, the attacker is coming at you with a knife. And there's a tremendous amount of power and energy in a knife. And so you say, thank you. As they come at you, you step aside, you let them go by you. Grab their wrist, you slap their wrist, you take the knife away, and you say, best 2 out of 3. And as you learn to do this dance of Aikido in your life and with your life, you're taken to a deeper level of being, where the rules of everything is more important. And you may take notes if you'd like, because as I'm sure you know, the more abundance you demonstrate you can handle, the more abundance you're eligible for. Step 1. Let it in. Step 2. Give thanks for it. Step 3, always, always, when I didn't have that, I didn't know that I could have that reliably, that I made a little moat for myself between me and the audience, so that I would be safe. That moat was intolerable. It still worked. I mean, the information left over the moat and people got it. And my early shows, which were a lot of this kind of very rich emotional material, I mean, people walked out of it kind of, wrung out. So the information got to the other side of the moat, but I was more sort of like, Morse code, whatever that is, to the other side of the continent. And I wanted to be in the same room with the audience. That what became clearer and clearer to me was that my fear, my inability to be intimate with myself, was making it difficult to be intimate with the audience. And that back when I'm selling anything, that's what I'm selling, is that you can be intimate with yourself. And when you can be intimate with yourself, you can be intimate with the audience. Along that same line, I view the audience as a focus, as a means of drawing stuff out of me. And sometimes what the audience draws out of me is not something that they really want to pay $10 for necessarily. I mean, I'm getting better at that as I get more skilled and as I just get more sort of cleaned out. There's less gunk for people to kind of suction out of me. But it works both. I mean, the poultice is also drawing the life out of me and the love, and whatever it is I have to give. If I have something to give, here we are. This would be a good time to give it. And puts me on the spot of asking myself, what do I think I have to give? What do I think there is to be given? When I'm in an audience, what do I want from a performer? What do I want when I go to the theater? I go to be changed. I go to be saved and healed. Occasionally entertained. Sometimes I just want leave them like I do. But most of the time I'm going for salvation. And so that's what I'm trying to provide, is sort of my version of salvation, which is not like, you can be healed. I mean, you can be healed. You can be responsible for your own lives. And if I model that behavior, then you might sort of get to the possible. Because there's not, I don't see a lot of role models for this in this culture. So am I up to that task? It's what I hire myself to do. And when I'm not, then I go, then I have an opportunity to forgive myself for not being perfect.
Joe, was there a temptation to fictionalize, to make up moments?
As the stories grow, I embellish. I do embellish. The core of the moment is part of the whole point of it is that you don't have to. It's like trying to get it. In order to draw you in, I allow myself a license of embellishment. Because that's the purpose of fiction, is so that you can tell the truth. That's why you lie, is to tell a deeper truth. Well, if I have to lie a little about the deer, the deer did jump over the car. I lie about that. That happened. But if I make that up, great idea. But I don't believe it. If I end up embellishing to sort of woo you a little bit more, so you'll come a little further with me, then I give myself that license. But at the core of this work is a knowledge that I am not here to exploit myself, to exploit my own ability, to exploit the pain that would be unacceptable to why I'm here to exploit. So there is a place in me that is a touchstone that I know. I can bounce anything that I'm doing up against it and find out if it's real, if it's gold. So that's the best part of the movie. You rub something there, you rub a substance up against this touchstone to find out if it's gold or not. And if it did something, if it did one thing, it wasn't gold. If it did another thing, it was gold. So,
yes. You said earlier that you were seeking a kind of consistency.
I'm sorry.
You said earlier that you were seeking a kind of consistency. You didn't know how it was going to go, one night connect. How often do you run into a plate of spaghetti? How often does that affect you? I mean, in terms of, yes, I still want to do this. I feel it's a good thing. And how much do you depend on the audience to keep you going?
Boy, it's a tricky one. I rely on the audience tremendously. I mean, no audience, no show. So that is relying on the audience. And I need your energy. What I've gotten much clearer about is that I'm responsible for my energy. So if my energy is not there, I'm learning not to be mad at the audience because my energy isn't there. You know, sometimes I'm lucky. It's actually quite rare when my energy isn't there and their energy isn't there. It's like, oh, this is gonna be work. Those nights it's work. But if I come out, I'm like, yes, you know, I have to do this. It's cool that I get to be paid to do this. It's handy. But I need to do this. Some nights I come out, I'm flat, and the audience is like, wow, Putty is my idea. It's like, God, thank you. It's just it's a real bonus that one should never count on. Serendipity is more likely to bail you out when you don't count on serendipity. So thankfully, those nights are few. They're much fewer, much less frequent now than they were years ago. As I learn to get more out of my own way. I mean, I'm breathing up here. I'm not like holding my breath and telling you a story. No, that's exhausting. But if I can breathe up here and be in the same room with you guys, then we're getting to be human beings trying to understand what we're doing together. And that, there's a lot of energy in that most of the time. Get out of here.
So much got it. Make sure to let people know about Joe opening at on the boards, and if someone wants to stick around for a little while, just whoever has to go to class and stuff, go ahead.